What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that came out this week. And, this is a big week at the old comic shop. So let's get into it, kicking it off with the old comic shop. With Absolute Evil. Absolute Evil number one from DC Comics, written by Al Ewing, art by Giuseppe Cavancoli and Stefano Nessi. Now, this is a new one-shot in the Absolute universe, and the ostensible idea here, and I'm going to put like a big blanket spoiler warning for everything that we're going to be talking about in the podcast,
but
particularly for this issue starting off right here. The thing that we knew going into this, or most people know, I think, going into this, was that the villains of the DC Universe, which so far, the Absolute Universe, who so far have been in their own separate titles, all to get together to meet for some reason. That does happen here, but there are also some enormous things that go down that I was absolutely not expecting in this issue. I thought, frankly, this was the wildest issue of the week in terms of the crazy big swings it took. I was personally a little nervous about taking these very, like, disparate Lego pieces of the Absolute Universe and seeing how they stick together. And I think it 100% worked in exactly the way it should have. There are some big cultural things that are going on here, political things that are going on here, as well as the plot machinations. I thought this was great.
Yeah, I mean, I also really enjoyed this. This book feels like it's the most Absolute book of all. This feels like this could have been the first Absolute book.
Boo.
Like it, I mean, I'm not knocking the other books. I love them. But this one, like, feels like it's sort of really setting the table in a really smart way. Pete must have loved it. You got to see Green Arrow just absolutely murdered.
No, this, first off, intriguing cover. I was like, ooh.
I love hands. You're a hand freak.
All Pete in. I love hands. It. I love a nice, like...
Well, to give Pete a hands plus are your feet. Up here, I will say that it was intriguing because we didn't know who all of the hands were initially. Like, there are... I'm probably going to get this wrong, but there's, like, five characters we knew about, and then we saw in the preview that Oliver Queen was going to be in there, and I was like, oh, okay, it's Oliver Queen. But there's still one more hand we didn't know whose hand that was, and we don't know whose hand that is until the final page. So, Pete, I agree with you. Cool, great. Intriguing cover.
Well, great. Let me ruin the rest of it for you. I did not enjoy the inside because it was all meetings. We sat in on fucking meeting after meeting. Oh. And then there was like a dead ghost in a meeting. And I was like, and then they brought in a body to dead the meeting. Ghost. I was like, you can't bring in a dead body to a conference room. How the hell does that work? That just makes no sense.
Sounds like somebody needs a vacation.
And so I was just like, my life sucks enough. I don't need more meetings in it, you know? So
why? Because you usually have to bring the corpse in and throw it on the table?
It's just that's a lot to clean up, you know? And then security's always like, hey, what the fuck are you doing with this dead body? It's like, listen, I need to make a point in this meeting. And, you know, this, and then it will be very poignant and they don't want to hear about it. And it's just like.
Security hates poignancy.
Oh, man. Yeah. Security hates this kind of stuff. And it's so hard to clean. And you have to drag it from different floor to different floor. And what if you go in the wrong conference room? Because all conference rooms look the same. It's just.
You bump into another guy carrying another dead body. You're like, ah.
And
oh,
you spilled that. You're like, is this your guts and blood? No, these are my guts and blood.
I was supposed to have that corpse.
I'm so sorry to interrupt this. I'm a little stuck on the dead ghost thing. Can you explain, first of all, who you thought was a dead ghost? And second of all, what is the difference between a dead ghost and a live ghost?
No, I'm sorry. I misspoke. It wasn't a dead ghost. It was when they brought the dead guy into the meeting.
Oh, okay. I was very intrigued.
Like sorry, I was, you know,
a
when
dead
I'm angry,
ghost is a
I,
living person. When it comes to Pete.
Yeah.
We're all just dead ghosts.
Oh, dark way of looking at it, but all right, I guess so. I really like the plot machinations here, and I'm sorry, Pete, I disagree with you on this. I understand if it was just a business meeting, but the way that they lay out the whole history of
yeah, but they're in a conference room having a fucking meeting. It's just
yeah, but it was all tense. New, interesting information.
I don't. Yes. That's a horrible
and it
way.
Wasn't. There was also a really interesting PowerPoint presentation at the same time where you found out how.
Go all right, now you're losing me, Alex.
Come
now
on,
you're losing
the fuck. Oh my god! But those PowerPoints really hit.
Here's
there
the
was
thing.
Great they drama happening.
They got to release the Google Meet invite for this. You know? I want to check that out.
I want to see those slides afterwards.
Yeah. Share the slides. Yeah. Evil.
There's some
hey,
huge
evil.
Things. Like, I'll throw out a couple of things that I absolutely loved about this book. First of all, the Green Arrow thing, because they announced back at San Diego Comic-Con that they're doing Absolute Green Arrow. It's coming out from Pornsack Pichichote and Raphael Albuquerque. Great team
the
on that book. Yes, great team on that book. Very excited. But when they talked about it at San Diego Comic-Con, they're like, yeah, you're going to first meet him in Absolute Evil. He's this billionaire who's fighting other billionaires. And I was like, this is, I don't, what is the take? Like, what is the take on this that makes this the Absolute Universe? Turns out the take of the Absolute Universe is he gets murdered by Hawkman. And most likely, based on the tease, I would assume it's going to be Roy Harper trying to avenge his death. Yeah. Against these unstoppable forces. That's cool. I love that idea. We also get Absolute Hawkman here, who betrays the Justice Society to the House Un-American Activities Committee. Excuse me. And then we see him. This one concerned me a little bit. We see him just like this mask, silent assassin guy. I'm a little worried it might be close to the Ultimate Wolverine take. I'm sorry that I'm boring you, Pete, by talking about things that made
you're
me
happy. You're recapping a meeting. Do you know how ridiculous this is? Yeah, it's like comic books had a meeting and interesting things happened, but it was during a meeting, so nobody gives a shit.
Pete, you were vending too many meetings. But I'm going to throw out that I agree. And this was the best just...
God, I hope there's a meeting with some superheroes in it because that was...
As in a meeting, you've made your point and we need to move on. Justin, what were you going to say?
Mute. We've seen the Absolute Universe from all these perspectives, and it felt just very disparate and like, yes, darker takes, or there's like different ideas at play for our main Trinity heroes. What I love about this book is it showed the small, insidious choices that the Omega Energy made happen, like how Sandman is just killed, how other heroes decided, you know what, I'm going to take the money and not be a hero. Like, that's interesting to me because those are the small things that we haven't really seen, and I think that plays in the other direction. At the end of the book, we get a reveal, and this is a spoiler, of Lex Luthor living a sweet, full head of hair country life as a very smart farmer.
We'll see how the way he answered the phone. The look is just
great reveal. Love that reveal. And what I love about that, I mean, and we'll see what happens, but to continue what you're saying, Justin, there's this whole speech that Joker gives at the end of the issue that really gets to the heart of how billionaires feel about the world. He's talking about how they serve justice. They are the ones who keep the world ordered and keep the world right. And these anarchists like Superman and Wonder Woman, Batwoman are trying to knock the world into anarchy, which he sees as bad. And he's saying these Omega particles, which we know as Darkseid's energy, that suffused the Absolute Universe, means that God is in their favor. And again, we're seeing that happen right now with these technocrats that are running all sorts of companies and pushing very specifically AI, despite all reason and profit. They are worshiping it. They are worshiping this thing and pushing it forward. And that's what Al Ewing is playing off of here. And I thought it was so smartly done and so of the moment. Great. Plus, great art throughout. From Giuseppe Cavicoli and Stefano Nessi. Why don't we move on? Something that was not a meeting, so I'm sure Pete loved. X-Men Age of Revelation Overture, number one from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Ryan Stegman. Picking up on the weird cliffhanger for the last issue of X-Men, Cyclops had a headache, but it wasn't just a headache. He was actually had his brain taken forward into the future, 10 years in the future, where Doug Ramsey, as Revelation, has changed the entire world. And Cyclops and, it turns out, Beast have been taken forward to help the remaining X-Men kill Revelation and stop whatever his Phase 2 is. That's their plan. So it's basically like a mix between Age of Apocalypse and a reverse Days of Future Past. Justin, when we were talking about this concept in the Discord, the Patreon Discord, you were pretty stoked for it. How did you feel about it in execution?
Execution. I mean, I like it mostly. The Cyclops stuff, and this was in the scene they released in the preview of this, I wish there was a little bit more, like, fun being had here. It's just a little, like, he's doing business, and even though this is obviously a dark future, a dystopia for the X-Men, but, like, us as a reader are excited about getting into this new huge crossover into, even though Age of Apocalypse was, like, a dark version of the X-Men universe, it was told in an exciting, like, ushering us into this, like, surprising take on all the X-Men. And this one just has, like, a little bit of negativity. Like, the Absolute Universe is another example. Dark take, but it's all so great and so heroic and juiced with good energy. And so I wish there was a little bit more of that, but I like some of the choices here. I'm excited for the books that spin out of this. I like that Revelation is like a very, it has become an Apocalypse style villain. I like his wife and what the storyline that happens there. I'm curious, these X-Men seem interesting. The takes seem interesting.
I mean, I was surprised, you know, Cyclops and Beast are kind of thrown forward in time. You know, they're kind of robbed of their present, and, you know, they were kind of immediately cool with it, which is super nice of them. I would have been a little bit more cranky about it. But I like this idea that they're setting up here, where it's the Cyclops versus this kind of other Wolverine. And I also thought it was very smart that this kind of other Wolverine took out Magneto first. You know, I don't trust White Beast. So this ought to be interesting, making some big swings. Love the art style. So.
I think he just went gray, Pete. Something that, like, we could say is happening to all
yeah,
of us.
You're saying I'm kind of slowly turning into White
you're
Beast?
You're sort of our White Beast.
Oh, man. Well, I don't trust me then.
You're starting with the man in the mirror, I guess. I thought this was all right. I'm not...
This is your age, Alex.
This is my age. It's the age of Revelation, a character that I love. Here's the thing, is that we talked about... I'm forgetting the exact number, but I want to say it was like X-Men 19, where they brought back Doug Ramsey as Revelation after the Era of Apocalypse storyline, which I hadn't loved. And then we read this issue, and I was very pleasantly surprised by it.
That issue was
really
good.
Because it presented an interesting way he was trying to be the Era of Apocalypse, but in his own Doug Ramsey way about it, which... definitely was going to go wrong, but what we've done here is completely skip to the it went wrong part. I assume the other side of this is we come out and we're like, hey man, Doug, don't do that. And then we play with, like, will he turn into Revelation or not, you know, over time. That's interesting. I'm fine with that if that's, like, the eventual outcome here. The thing is, it's hard. It is impossible for me to not compare it to these other things, specifically Age of Apocalypse and Days of Future Past. And in particular, Days of Future Past was setting Kitty Pryde back in time to be like, we can prevent this future. Here, they brought Cyclops and Beast forward because they're like, you guys are stone cold killers. Help us kill your friend, which doesn't have the same level of stakes and urgency to me as Days of Future Past. So I'm not quite sure why they went in that direction. But like you guys said, I think Glob Herman Commando is fun.
It's great. Great to have a fun, innocent character be a killer.
I guess. I don't know. I don't like this sort of stuff. But like, I'm trying to keep an open mind here. And like you said, there are some interesting sounding miniseries. And
yes, a lot of comics are coming
out
of this.
I'm very curious also about the span of the story of this event. Because we have this Overture issue, and then we have like 16 three-issue miniseries, and then we have the finale. The thing that I'm worried about is the story is in the Overture and the finale, and then there's whatever 16 times 3 is in the middle, 48?
The answer is lots. Yeah. No, 48, yeah. I mean, the thing is, I'm hoping that the creators from the main titles will still carry some spine for the story, and it won't just be... This one seems big enough that it's not just going to be a classic Alpha, Omega, and everything else is sort of like, if you like it, give it a shot.
Yeah. But we'll see. We're in the age of revelation, and we're going
to
keep
following. Hold on. Wait, I'm having a revelation. And what? Pete, I hate to say this to you, but we might be in a meeting right now.
Oh, no. Oh,
shit. See, have you ever thought about that? This is like a meeting.
See why I hate these things?
Do you hate this thing? Adventure Time, the Bubline College Special, number one from Odie Press by Caroline Cash. We had Caroline Cash on the live show a couple of months back. Check it out.
We should have talked to her about this.
I don't think that we did, actually, because it wasn't announced yet. Hey, finally, Pete gets a win, sort of, asterisk. Yeah. AU following What If... Princess Bubblegum and Marceline went to college together and fell in love, and following that forward. I thought this was adorable and fun. I really enjoyed it. I thought Caroline Cash's art style was perfect for it. But yes. Justin, you are our Adventure Time master here.
That's right.
I thought it was great. Like, I love the idea that we can have these AU things. Like, Adventure Time show did such a great job of building out the mythology in just a ton of different directions. And so to have this to follow up on that is really great. Caroline Cash is so good in this world. I think we should get – I would like to have more of this. I've been rewatching Adventure Time on and off with my kids, even though they're definitely too young to be watching that. And we just got to the first episode where Peppermint Butler is revealed as being so sort of evil for seemingly no reason. And then that's just something that is just core canon to the show, that dude is a monster. And that's very fun. This is great.
Yeah, I just, this is very enjoyable. Love the kind of slice of life. And the art does such a great job of kind of like separating it enough. And so it kind of creates this space for this special kind of story. And just really enjoyable. Art just sets such a beautiful tone for this story. And it's touching, it's cute, it's fun. I very much loved it.
Moving on to another big issue from DC Comics, Justice League, the Omega Act Special number one from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Cian Torme and Yasmin Putri. This is set not in the absolute universe, but the mainline DC universe, picking off of the arc in Superman, where he and Booster Gold fought Darkseid's Legion of Supervillains, I guess. And now they're trying to rally the whole Justice League and get them on board with what's going to happen next. This is, as it says on the cover, a prelude to DCKO, which comes out next week. So it's basically about them figuring out they need to gather this Omega energy to figure out how to beat Darkseid, though they don't quite know it yet. What'd you guys think about this one?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of this week's comics are really just kind of like getting us to this point where it's like, hey, we need to talk to you all just to kind of set up this big event.
Everybody into the conference room.
Yeah, like, and I'm like, oh, man, here we go. Let's set up this sick meeting. But I do think that, like, beyond the, hey, Booster Gold and Superman need to talk to all of you guys, I still think that this is kind of interesting and cool and great art. And, I'm looking forward to what's going to happen next.
I would want to compliment just DC editorial. The way they've been able to line up this event with the Absolute Universe and the Absolute Evil book that we just talked about at the same time, it's incredibly complex. And they're able to imbue all of these with just a great drama, with bigger ideas beyond just the sort of like setting up the event. Like, you know, I don't want to go back and just slog on Age of Revelation, but that feels like a very plot. Here's what we're going to be dealing with going forward. While this book and the Absolute Evil feel like there's a larger idea here about what good versus evil mean, what influences us, how we would be different if different things were in our environment, like Omega Particles. And that's cool. And I really like, these are just full meals of books to really chew on. And that's great. This book feels big. It's setting up so much. I'm just really impressed with the work. I think the art in this book is excellent. Everything feels high drama. There's a flashback sequence here that is menacing and also feels like just a great use of character and smart to position this story as that running through this larger story.
Yeah, this is fun stuff. It's definitely a lot of like, okay, we need to lay some of the groundwork between what happened in Superman and DC KO just so everybody, yeah, to Pete's point, is on the same page before we get there. But credit to Joshua Williamson for making it a fun adventure at the same time with, like you said, Justin, some dark overtones.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Next up, speaking of dark overtones, Venom number 250 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing and Charles Soule, art by Carlos Gomez, Terry Dodson, and Todd Knock. There's two stories here celebrating this milestone for Venom. The front story, Mary Jane and Venom are still figuring out their place working together while in space. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, the first guy to wear Venom, who was a Skrull, I think that was revealed at like Donny Cates' run or something like that. Maybe I'm imagining that. Whatever it is, he's rocketing back to Earth to warn people that Null is back, even though there's a bit of a twist by the end of the issue.
Yeah,
and then there's a backup twist story with Charles Soule writing a story of Eddie Brock and his old school adventures. What do you guys think about this? Excited to see old Smile Face back in action?
Old Smile Face.
Yeah, he's always like, he's always got too many teeth. He's got a big smile and teeth.
A lot of smiling characters in the Venom universe.
Yeah, Venom's all about the smiles.
I guess so.
The dentistry. For goopy people. But think about the Justin's, no dentist.
Yeah, Justin's breaking like a lot of internet news here that Venom is pushed by a big dentist. And they want you to eat up the Venom comics.
Yeah, 4 out of 5 dentists agree, eat brains.
Yeah. Eat brains.
Yeah, at first I thought like, okay, great, 250, this is going to be, this is going to be a kind of Venom celebration. There'll be a bunch of Venom stories, but we only got two, but there were still two good ones. So, we got kind of the fun MJ Venom mass fight and the kind of twist here with you thinking the Null, but then it's we also get a little Helena of Asgard, so that was fun. And then the second story is throwback Eddie Brock, so great. I feel like this is a fun celebration. I wanted like old covers and stuff like that, but it's not, I guess they don't always roll out all the stops.
Haven't we seen all the covers enough?
Never enough. I love it.
I love Mary Jane as Venom. I've been really enjoying this. I was definitely feeling the anxiety that she really should have made that meeting so she could book her part in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. You know, running late to auditions, you know, it's a rough lifestyle.
Yeah, so that was great. I felt seen. I Mary Jane feels like she's broken up with Paul, sort of. Mm-hmm. Tacitly here, like in the book itself, feels like it's shitting on him even more than the internet is. They're like, I forget who is it Venom who's like, yeah, your boyfriend made that dumb device that almost killed you. I was like, why? It's so nasty.
And that's, you know, that's like she's saying it. You know what I mean? Because they're like a part of each other.
Yeah, it's this real soft breakup vibes for Paul. So for all you Paul haters out there, you're going to get your wish, I believe.
Come on.
I'll tell you, I actually loved the agent scene because when they got to her agent was like, you have a terrible washed up career, and started listing all the insane things she does. I was like, oh, right. That's who she's supposed to be. We haven't seen that in years.
Well, so, and I think she's become Peter Parker in this story. And that's cool. I think that's such a smart, funny idea that is backed by continuity because, of course, she's flaky. She's was with Peter Parker forever. She's had a million different careers. It tracks.
Yeah. Great stuff. Very fun. Like the Null twist as well. Next up, Starship Godzilla.
Come on!
Number one from IDW. Nothing's going to stop them now. Written by Chris Gooch. Art by Oliver Ono. This is part of the new Kaisei universe, and we've seen two of those books so far. This one, per the name, is set in space and dealing with kaijus in space. Pete! You seem to like Godzilla, I'm gathering. What did you What did you think?
First off, fun cover. Gets me excited for the inside bits. Yeah, love the art style, kind of a cartoon anime style, which is fun. Love it. And yeah, I was having a great time with this. I thought the story was cool. Like, what if Godzilla was a spaceship? Oh, you got me. I don't need any more plot.
Let me ask you this.
I don't need any more plot, dude. That is a sick premise. I love it.
What if it was like broken down Pontiac Godzilla? I feel like you would buy anything. Big old trash can Godzilla.
Dude, do you know how hard it is to drive by these old cars on the roads that's out here? Oh, dude. Oh, it's so hard.
What? Big old pile of dog shit, Godzilla.
Okay, wait, I got a real stumper for you, Pete. Godzilla business meeting.
Ooh.
What do you do?
That sounds
fun. How do
you
feel about that?
Yeah, because you can't just show up and destroy it. You have to sit in, I guess.
Well, if it's all Godzilla's at the meeting.
Godzilla, Mothra, King Kong, King Ghidorah, is that how you pronounce it? They're all sitting around a table talking about the quarterly profits.
Don't ruin Godzilla for me.
Well, would you like that? Because it's still Godzilla. Really?
I wouldn't like it.
All right. Well, anyway, we like this. This is fun. The art is fun. Why don't we move on and talk about Absolute Superman number 12 from DC Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Rafa Sandoval. This is the beginning of the Battle of Kansas storyline as Superman, Jimmy, and Lois arrive in Smallville, find some allies, some enemies, including Ra's al Ghul and Talia al Ghul, are coming for them. We also get some more backstory stuff going on with Superman and his cape. Another great issue of this
cape
book.
Talk.
Yeah, this is, it's like, what if Superman had a cape like Spawn or something, or like a Doctor Strange cape?
It's like
that
a
was like alive
cape.
Yeah,
it's like Magneto's cape in Revelation, where it's all tiny capes are in.
Was that he had like a feathered cape and I didn't understand why. I was like, is he a Birdman now? What's happening?
He's Birdman, no, it was made of hundreds Lawyer of tiny Birdman. Metal pieces so you can shoot him around.
All right, look like a bird cape. All
right. Yeah, I mean, we got a fun,
it looks like feathers, but it's not feathers.
We got a beefcake.
An Afghan has tiny pieces. It doesn't mean you have a real bird. Alex, you're not a bird.
That's a fair point. I'm just saying Magneto traditionally doesn't have bird powers, so I'm not quite sure why in the future he has bird powers, but I'm sure they have a miniseries like Magneto colon bird, and we'll find out.
Yeah. Magneto sings like an angel. Magneto karaoke. Go ahead, Pete.
So we have a beefcake kind of intense cover here. And I enjoy.
Wait, did you say beef cape? You're saying that the race is Superman's cape?
Oh, yeah, no, because I like that. I also thought you said beef cape, and I was like, that's good. Thumbs up.
Oh, great. Yeah, so I did say that then, I guess, if you guys think that's cool.
I really liked it.
But just a quick edit. Quick edit for you, Pete. Would you mind saying beef cape?
Beef cape. Yeah, so
great.
If you like,
I'll edit that all together in a way where it makes sense.
Alex, I think he actually said beef cape the first time. So I think we're good.
Oh, we're good.
Yeah, if you like capes, you're going to love this.
Well, we broke him on that one. This book, like, all the Absolute books are good. This one, The Exploration of Superman, we have this underlying mystery of something bad happened with the Kents. And it's going to be bad, I feel like, when we finally find that out. But, and we get to see Superman be not good at being Superman, something that we don't really ever see much of. So I really like that, and I like this rage-filled kid still making the choices, the right choices for a Superman. It's a really good fresh take.
Well, and I'd extend that to Lois and Jimmy, who are now part of his team. And it's an interesting contrast to what they're talking about in Absolute Evil, where there, like we said, Joker is laying out this universe bends towards what he considers justice, but we know is injustice. Superman is showing the opposite way. He is building these people around him. And we also get to see the people in Smallville doing the classic, like, we're threatening, but actually we're very friendly and we support you thing. And that, like, really gets me, like, that moment of when New York's like, we got you, Spider-Man. I love that stuff. Like, that's why we read the superhero stuff. And so seeing moments like that, it fights against this idea that this Omega energy infuses every single part of the Absolute universe. And I love seeing that. Like, it gives you that glimmer of hope, even when you know, like we're saying, Jason Aaron will keep kicking you in the nuts over and over again with this title. Great seeing Rafa Sandoval back on here. I really feel like the title is not the same without him, so I was happy to see him back on art. Spirits of Violence, number one from Marvel, written by Sabir Purzada, art by Paul Davidson. If you thought that one Ghost Rider wasn't enough and you wanted to see all the Ghost Riders on a Ghost Rider team fighting an evil Ghost Rider, Pete, this book is for you.
Oh, man. First off, cool-ass cover. This looks so badass. I was so excited for this. I was like, oh, my God, they made a comic just for me. This is such a beautiful moment. And unfortunately, the art was just, it felt so like, you know how sometimes in movies they show like a fight too close where you can't see all the things that are happening and it kind of drives you nuts? That's what happened with me and this, and I couldn't enjoy it because it was like, they didn't zoom out to show like how amazing this is that all these kind of Ghost Riders are together. It was all zoomed in and so dense, and I just couldn't. It just kind of really messed it up for me. So I went from such a excited point to like, oh, no, my oldness is not letting me. I feel like the guy who's at the bar going, is it loud in here? I feel like it's too loud in here. So, it's just the panels were so busy and kind of it pulled me right out of the story. So I had a hard time enjoying this.
Spirits of Violence, too loud, says Pete.
Yeah.
I mean, I take your point, Pete. I sort of agree with you there. I thought the team of bad guys here was wild. Ivory Man, Sweeney Drood, which is the combination of two musicals, I think.
Yep.
That's some shit. That's some not scary shit.
One is a play. One is a musical, and one is a play. I'll tell you what, with the introduction of that team, I was instantly thinking about how we talk about constantly everybody's trying to get their own black order by taking five weirdos and putting them together.
Right.
This one worked for me because they are so off the rails. So, I don't know. That's all.
That's cool. I'm glad it did.
Yeah. More than the Ashen Combine, I would say.
All right. How dare you? Don't you come for the Ashen Combine in lieu of the Black Order and the who are the Blood, the vampire guys
Blood
from Varney's?
I remember Bloodstorm. Was that what it was?
No, Blood Coven is right. Okay. Bloodstorm was probably something said. And these
Bloodstorm Blood was the enormous cloned version of Dracula who was part of that team.
These are just called the Decayed, when we know we need just, like, nonsense words to really be a team these days.
Yep. Well, there you go. The Author Immortal, number one, from Image Comics, written by Frank J. Barbier, art by Morgan Beam. This is focusing on a just-okay writer who really wants to be a novelist, and he ends up getting hired by somebody who seems very similar to the old J.K. Rowling, though it's not explicitly stated in the book, and ends up getting hired to co-write, or really write, the books from a character who I'm going to assume is like ethnically veiled C.S. Lewis, but I'm not 100% sure, goes out to the house with his kid, and ultimately, spoilers for the end here, but I think this is like the kickoff of the book, really, gets sucked into a fantasy world out of the book itself. There's also some dark creatures and dastardly things going on. Justin, I know you were excited about this one. Take it away.
Yeah, I really like this. I feel like a lot of stories like this, when I was just getting into it, I was like, okay, yes, author's book becomes real and these modern people have to figure it out. But then the choice to make the main character a sort of not great writer who's called in by a J.K. Rowling type figure, I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then when they owned the negativity, the badness of J.K. Rowling, I was like, oh, okay, this feels like very of the moment and a useful way of digesting things that are happening. So like that I thought was just a really, it had me leaning in on it. And so when they get sucked into the fantasy world and we get a little bit of the mystery around the J.K. Rowling author and like what she's doing, and she seems seemingly cursed. I think there's just a lot of interesting elements that really came together well for me here. So I like this a lot.
Well, what's nice is it's a big comic, so you got 40 pages of this, so there's a lot of great art. It's a weird story. The hard part for me is, like, who am I rooting for here besides the kind of kid who loses his childhood? Because the father is an asshole. He's cheating and a piece of shit, so well, I'm not rooting for him.
I think the idea here is that, like, everything's a little more complicated on the surface. I feel like you're going to end up rooting for the father and his.
Well, yeah, I don't want to root for the father.
I mean, this is a crazy idea because this is the first comic book I've ever read, but I feel like he might be a piece of shit at the beginning, but learn some lessons, do you think, over the course of the story?
I don't know,
and
man.
Get better in some way? I don't know. That
he's getting
crazy,
played by a demon, and, you know, it's just.
Maybe it's, he starts as a piece of shit and gets even worse by the end.
Yeah, probably. That's probably what's going to happen.
Classic rom-com structure there. Yeah. I thought this was really good. Exactly like you were saying, Justin, every new detail made it more intriguing. Really like Morgan Beam's art in here. It's very cartoony, but engaging as well. The fantasy elements are very dark and disturbing. I mean, we'll see how it goes, but it feels like if you like Helen of Windhorn and are looking for something next, this might be an interesting one to pick up. But also potentially the Me You Love in the Dark, because the shadow monster has a sense of that as well. So I don't know. Similar. Lots of stuff going on here. I'm excited to follow this one.
And keeping our dentistry theme going, because there's a lot of sick teeth in this one.
I thought sick you teeth. Were like, if you like Anna Wintour, you're going to love this.
I mean, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't? She's a legend.
Who doesn't?
Batman, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Matt Fraction, art by Jorge Menez. In this issue, Robin is on the run and only Batman can help him, maybe. Pete, 2 issues in, how are you feeling about this new run?
Well, first off, cool cover. And I loved seeing Batman actually being patient with Robin and nice to Robin. So that was just like such a nice stress reliever for me. But damn, then the cops just shooting everybody was really fucking stressing me the fuck out. But I liked this fun way of telling, you know, this kind of story about Robin learning to drive the Batmobile. And I enjoyed that. But it was also weird because it was like almost like Damian was like a punchline, almost like comic relief, which I was like, whoa, I don't know how I feel about that. But I'm having a blast with this. Amazing art, interesting ideas, big swings happening. Yes, please.
I like the new take. I feel like this is a Bruce Wayne that is at least has a little bit more personality than a lot of the recent runs where he's just so stoic. He's able to sort of respond, be a little bit funny. He takes a pretty intense blast to the head and is still able to talk like a human. So I thought that was cool. I also really like setting up. I mean, we have Vandal Savage running the GPD, and they're now leaning into like cops versus vigilantes, which that's great. Like, I think getting back to a basic core idea here, they're going to be more on the run. They're going to be more fighting with Vandal Savage, who I think is a good villain in a good position. The art's really cool. I like this run.
Yeah. Next up, White Tiger Reborn, number one for Marvel, written by Daniel Jose Older and Cynthia Paleo. Art by Bruno Abdias and Moises Hidalgo. We are getting two stories here, plus some ancillary matter about White Tiger as the new White Tiger takes on the mantle of Hector Ayala. And then we get a follow-up story there as well. What'd you guys think about this one?
First off, like, love this White Tiger god. Like, super chill, very cool. Great art. I feel like I'm enjoying this kind of origin story, but I'm excited to see, like, once this is, now that we've told that, like, what this character is going to be about and what kind of action and kind of different choices they're going to make out there in the world. So, yeah, I'm excited for what's to come, and I thought they did a good job of kind of setting up this, getting the kind of story, origin story out of the way so we can kind of be off and running on some adventures next.
I thought it was interesting, like, the White Tiger, like, oh, there's a lot of White Tigers out there. So, like, everyone has to sort of catch up. One's dead. Some aren't getting along, but they need to get it back together, which I think is cool. And
Did you like the talking tiger god? Did you think that was pretty cool?
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, right.
That makes sense.
White pretty tiger. Chill.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's White Tiger the god, White Tiger the ghost man. Do you think that the ghost god and the ghost man hang out?
I would hope so, right? Humans?
And do you think it's a dead ghost or a living ghost?
Mm. That's tough.
That is tough. We're having a tough time with this. So why don't we move on and talk about Kill All Immortals 2, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Zach Kaplan, art by Fico Osio. Per the title, this is a sequel to the first series, Kill All Immortals, which I think we all liked quite a bit. That was about a family of immortals and the one woman who is part of the family and is trying to kill them to save her boyfriend. There were some big changes at the end of the last series that kicks in here, picking up off the cliffhanger there, that they are not the only immortals. And in fact, now they are not immortals at all. And this other family is trying to kill them. It's still bloody. It's still brutal. I still had a fun time.
Yeah. The stakes just went up when in this new arc, like, the fact that they aren't immortal and they're constantly being attacked by other immortals is, like, more stressful for sure. They seem pretty confident in their ability to survive. And I'm like, guys, maybe you don't understand mortality because it comes pretty fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
It comes at you fast.
Oh, man, does it. First off, fun
right?
cover.
White Beast.
Yeah, man. Get excited about it. Life is not immortal.
White Beast. White Beast, do you know White Tiger?
Yeah, we chill sometimes. I just cool. think that I had a blast
where is
with
that?
This.
Some sort of club for whites, or what do you call it?
Oh, for beasts, what do you bro. Call it? Don't make
oh,
it racial.
Beast. Oh, yeah. No, for sure.
He's a beast supremacist.
Fun last kind of page reveal. Great art, tons of action, blood and guts. This is very cool, and I'm enjoying this.
Absolute Green Lantern. Oh, my gosh. Absolute Green Lantern. Oh,
that dude's dead, Alex. That dude's dead.
Absolute Green Lantern number 7 from DC Comics, written by Al Ewing, art by Jason Howard and Riley Rosmo. This is an issue that takes us away from the main action to focus on what's going on in space. Now that we have a wild amount of mythology that has been built out here, we know that Mogo is a black star and headed to
Mogo.
Destroy the universe, take over the universe, not sure. Mm-hmm.
Certainly hates other planets.
Yes, oh, yeah. But we get at least two other reveals in here that are pretty crazy paired with the absolute evil issue. One, we get an evil Kilowog in here, which
I've never been so scared of someone saying poozer.
I'll tell you what, that is a really upsetting because he's like the best guy in the DC universe. So to see him
famously
totally evil,
nice.
It's like, oh, man, oh, I don't like this. This is making me very uncomfortable, which is the point. And then we get a reveal of an even bigger villain by the end. What did you guys think about this one?
Yeah, this is great. A cool cover. Love the art style. Some real badass villain stuff and just kind of stacking the hype. towards the end of it. Yeah, I just think this is great and a ton of fun.
Yeah, I mean, in a book that has been sort of like good, but like a little like, oh, I don't know exactly what's going, where this is going. I think it was nice to get out and just see some things that we knew, we could see very clearly what was happening. An evil Kilowog, different interpretations of the spectrum powers of the lantern, yeah, which I think is cool. And turnabouts, life's coming at Kilowog fast in this issue for sure. So that's cool. Like, this book is one of the weirder ones of Absolute. It's sort of like is just moving like a butterfly. But I do like where it landed here.
Next up, Spider-Man Noir number one from Marvel, written by Eric Larson, art by Andrea Brocardo. This is a classic Spider-Man Noir tale featuring Peter Parker. He's a detective in the 1930s. Gwen Stacy comes to hire him for a mission, goes a little wrong, and gets messed up. And clearly, this is to have a book on the stands for when the TV show comes out on Prime Video. And that's basically the idea. But also, it's kind of neat to see Eric Larson on a Marvel book, because I think it's been a very long time.
When I saw his name, I was like, is this the same Eric Larson? I was like, it must be. Yeah. But I was definitely surprised. But cool. And honestly, like, I was a good read. I liked this. I like there's a lot of talk about, like, you shouldn't be shooting people, right, Spider-Man? And he's like, I guess.
Oh, but I like it. Yeah, I think this is... I'm sorry, were you done? Did you have more to say? Okay.
I mean, I'll chip in.
Okay, cool.
I'm not shy.
I hear you. I just didn't want to cut you off. Cool cover. I was excited because I love the Spider-Verse Spider-Man noir, you know, the Nicolas Cage voiced. So I thought maybe that was going to be the tone, but this is more like the Spider-Man where he's joking just kind of back in time. So I was a little kind of disappointed in that. But, you know, I still thought the kind of Gwen stuff was fun. And, you know, there was some interesting choices with the Nazi bat and stuff like that. But, yeah, I was all right.
Here's the only thing that I'll throw out there that is a little weird to me. And I don't know if this is 100% confirmed, but I believe on the Spider-Noir show, Nicolas Cage is Ben Reilly, not Peter Parker. So it's weird to me that this book is clearly like so that we have something on the shelves, but it's not Ben Reilly. That's all. Just a little thing where I'm like, let's, I don't know, let's bring it in a little bit.
It's make close it easy to for making people. Sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only little thing I had to that nicked me a little bit is there's the referencing the multiverse in this book. He's like, yeah, and then I know Spider-Man. I was like, that's not, don't say that. That damages your noir tone, guy.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I also know a talking pig, Spider-Man, and I can go visit other spider people anytime I want. I'm like, ugh, no, let's just do the noir stuff.
Yeah, Humphrey Bogart used to say that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
I know
I know a ham.
I know a ham with my name on it. The Department of Truth, number zero, from Image Comics, written by Jamestown IV, art by Martin Simmons. This is a zero issue, which is something that Pete usually hates. I'm curious to see if he likes this, because this is actually a big mythology issue. The reason for the number zero is it takes place not back in the day, but right now, pretty much, or at least
2016,
leading up to our current objective reality in a very upsetting way. Yeah. What'd you guys think about this one?
I liked it. I heard about this book on the comic Internet? Book club trivia section in the recent episode. So that was cool.
Nice.
I learned that the biggest fan of it on the podcast is named JT Sizz. So that was really cool.
That's you.
Cool.
Now, did you hear anything about how Josh Hartnett is doing?
Oh my God, dude.
Honestly,
I did get an earful on that guy.
Why would you call that back? That's just, oh
my God.
That's
where I get all my so dumb Hartnett news.
Oh my God, why? So,
I will say, I will talk about this book. This,
please do.
This feels like was the story that got James Tynion IV to write Department of Truth. this mm-hmm. the first issue came out in 2020. This book set in 2016, the start of the first Trump administration. Like, I feel like, and that's, we're dealing with a lot of that stuff here pretty outwardly, with the language. I mean, not by name at all, but like in the language that is chosen and some of the attitudes of the characters. And I just thought that crystallized so hard. And I'm speculating here, but what JT4 was doing when he was developing this idea and bringing it together, and it just works so well. So much happens in this book all the time. The idea just keeps getting deeper and more concerning to me as a reader, and to the characters who are on either side of the issue here. So it's, I thought this was one of the best issues of this series, I thought.
Yeah, it feels like this is a fun idea of, like, having the zero issue kind of be like the last issue, you know, where we're kind of like wrapping this all up in this very interesting, cool way. And this was really impressive what they did artistically every issue with this comic. I normally don't like... zero issues. Yeah, thank you. But what they're kind of doing here, it kind of goes beyond that. So I tip my hat to it to kind of make the point. But man, just really impressive. The Trump stuff was just really impressive. This is just, the art was just, oh, it was so cool. Really a hell of a ride and worth it. And I enjoyed the crap out of this. This is great comics.
You know, we... on the live show, and I know you guys know this, but I'm mentioning for our other listeners, we're talking a little bit. We had a whole panel on sci-fi. We were talking about how you reflect the worlds outside of your window when people are kind of like missing the point of subtlety. And it really does feel like Department of Truth has never been exactly subtle. But like you were saying, Justin, getting down to the brass tacks of here's Pizzagate, and specifically this guy going yes. into a pizza shop and being like, there are kids down there and I got to save these kids. The whole idea of this book is you can meld reality based on what you believe your truth is, tying that very directly to the Trump administration the first time around is a stark reality of where we are now and the worst yes. manipulation of reality that we're in right now. So it's pretty upsetting, the whole book, to read, but... like you said, very timely, very well done. And every single page that Martin Simmons delivers is like, put that directly in a museum.
Yeah. And once again, Alex, you have not seen the movie 23 with Jim Carrey, but you are kind of describing the plot where it's like, if you look at numbers and kind of put so much onto it, you can kind of like almost start to distort your own reality around that.
I got
to
check out this movie. This is in theaters now?
Yep. Yeah, great. Definitely. Okay. Streaming
right,
now.
After we're done here, I'll head on down to the old Alamo.
In the theater of Pete's mind right now. Mm-hmm. One last thing about it, though, to your point, Alex, like, it's crazy for a book that's been running for this many issues to come back and just doubly nail down its premise, to really push its premise even further into your brain. Like, I feel like most sci-fi gets away from the premise eventually and builds it out or heightens it away. This, I feel like, is actually recommitting so hard with this, and it really, really gets you.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to something a little lighter. Gotham Academy, first year, number one from DC Comics, written by Carl Kerschel, Brendan Fletcher, and Becky Cloonan, art by Marco Ferrari. Let's bring back the beloved YA title set at the Gotham Academy of the title. Follow a bunch of students there. It is... tangentially related to Batman stuff. This particular issue gets more into tying it to Batman than I think it did previously, as we follow some new students at the school and some returning characters. Honestly, I have always liked this team that worked on this, but there's something about Gotham yeah. Academy that like I could never quite hook into in terms of the tone or the pace of the writing or something like that. But this really worked for me. I think they really nailed this first issue, recentered the premise, gave us some interesting characters, tied it a little tighter to the Bat mythology, and I thought it was very cool.
Yeah, I love this as well. I love the art style. It's got such a great kind of feel and vibe to it, which I really enjoyed. You know, this main character is going through a lot. Please stay away from Dr. Crane. That's just, you know, a little pro tip there. But I'm worried about the future, but I kind of love this first issue. So, yeah, this is great.
I think the thing that really works here is a lot of these stories, you meet a bunch of people, and so you're a little diffuse on the characters. This one really locks in on our main character, and really you get to know her, what has brought her here, what she's struggling with, and sort of landing here. We meet everyone through her, and I think that works really well to get us into the book.
Ultimate Wolverine, number 10 from Marvel, written by Chris Condon, art by Alex Linz. In this issue, somebody gives Wolverine a sword, and I don't know why you would do that. He already
Great gift.
He already has six swords. That's like giving a human fingernails.
Come on, man. That's not true at all. He can't appreciate a good sword.
I always have more fingernails on my Christmas list, Alex.
I wish people would give me swords.
Yeah, in a stocking. You open up their stocking, you're like, ah, it's all fingernails.
We got them from a corpse, says my family.
All right, first off, badass cover, okay? Just absolutely glorious.
Wait, did you mean badass cover? Like, you don't like it, yuck?
No. No, badass.
Like that like cover's
glorious
ass.
Cover. That cover is fantastic. It's cool looking.
Have you guys? Did you guys get tickets for that yet? The Billy Bob Thornton movie, Badass. That's gonna be really good. I saw the trailer. Oh, it's Jesus so funny. It is
I think it's the same donkey from Shrek.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. How'd they get him?
What was his name again?
Donkey. Pete, do you remember? The donkey. But what's his name?
Donkey.
That movie's a creative tour de force. They wouldn't just call it Donkey Donkey. They wouldn't just do something like that.
Anyways, if we could talk about how great this comic was, because I really loved it. We got like a Seven situation in here where you're sending a box, head in a box, which I don't recommend. It's really hard to do, and it leaks, and it's just a real mess.
But, this is when you have to bring one in for your conference meeting room.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I tell you, this is just kind of cool. We got an evil Russian Colossus here. You know, I'm happy for Sabretooth. You know, he's going to get out. He's going to start his own family and just kind of get out of the business. And I feel like that's a great kind of move for him. So I'm excited for his future. But this kind of blood sword thing looks really amazing. I really wish we would kind of lean into Wolverine's origins and kind of when he trained in Japan as a samurai and just kind of really went down that path. But
regular Wolverine you want to see more of that?
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like maybe he, you know, puts the claws in and just uses the sword a little bit. You know what I mean? For fun.
Puts the claws in.
Yeah. But the Colossus calling Wolverine Winter Soldier is just kind of it's kind of a weird kind of jab to it. So I was just like, oh, man, why does that sting so much when he says it like that? But, yeah, this is cool, and I'm having a blast with this.
Yeah, I like this as well. It's funny how Colossus has become such a popular villain. We don't see him get to be a hero much. He just gets to be a straight-up monster, and we get that here. And, you know, Sabretooth saying, like, I just want to get out and start a family has big, just going to do one last thing before I quit the force. So I worry for his future. I feel like he might have a head in a box here pretty soon.
Oh, don't say that. What's in the box,
really like
man?
Alex Linz's art. I thought that was really good on this issue. It's a little lighter than we've been getting with this title from Alessandro Capuccio, so I was surprised about that. But it worked for me. He has a very cute, beardy Wolverine in this issue, so fun stuff. Minor Threats, The Last Devil Left Alive, at number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Patton Oswalt and Jordan Bloom, art by Scott Hepburn. Unlike a lot of the other Minor Threats titles, this is continuing the main story, focusing on Playtime. In fact, this is the kickoff of the final miniseries of the Playtime saga, at least for this phase of it. So I don't know if she's going to make it out alive, per the title, basically.
I've been really enjoying just the Minor Threats universe, and they're doing so much there, and we get a lot of titles from it. It reminds me a little bit of a combination between Black Hammer and Invincible. We get the light tone of Invincible. There's some fun happening here. There's a lot of characters happening at the same time. And then the just consistently and overall tone of what Black Hammer has been doing for a long time. So it's really good. This, we meet Scalpel. We follow Scalpel going about and having sort of a tough day, but a real here I go again energy to Scalpel.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting too old for this shit. And that was cool. I like the reveal of Playtime. Playtime, the art is really just really nice superhero art, I thought.
Yeah, really just unbelievable panel designs. There's some really cool splash pages, some like the one where it's just like the silhouette of a woman with all the kind of panels inside of that. Really cool, just really creative, artistic, forward panel page layouts that are just masterful pieces of art.
And I'd also throw out there, I love the plot of this miniseries, or at least this first issue, though I think they'll continue it, which is multiversal super villain gentrification, which feels like exactly the perfect final boss for Playtime, who is a character that we met being down on her luck downtown in like the bad part of town. So, of course, she would be fighting against a landlord in the final bit of this series. So great stuff all around. Adventures of Superman, Book of L, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Scott Godlewski. Very similar to everybody's favorite character, Cyclops, Superman also has been sent to the future, which is a dark dystopian future that is ruled by some of his enemies, and he is discovering more about that, as well as what happened to the House of L that made them fall. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, this is fun. You got Old Man Olsen, fun kind of reveal, great arts, tons of action. This is interesting.
I like how he's waiting to pop his claws as well, just like Old Man Logan.
Yeah.
But he'll do it.
He'll do it.
Well,
I don't know. No, he's not going to. Yeah. He couldn't possibly.
He's going to give it a shot. You ever try to pop your claws?
You shouldn't. It's dangerous.
Why? Because when if it happens?
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're on an airplane or something.
Oh, good. Yeah, I try not to pop anything on an airplane, but
smart.
You keep squeezing, you might just prolapse your colon. I really liked the Jimmy Olsen reveal. That scene was really sweet and nice.
Great stuff. Really enjoying this. I'm excited to see what Philip Kennedy Johnson has to say about Superman going forward, sort of his big mission statement. Next up, The Amazing Spider-Man, number 13 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Pepe Larraz. In this issue, we're focusing on Space Spider-Man, who just needs to get stronger. He has a new costume and a new crew that is backing him up, as well as a new mission. Like I said with the last issue, which followed Earth Spider-Man, this is great. I'm having a great time reading this book. Joe Kelly understands Spider-Man, knows how to make it work. And this has the feel of like the classic Crossroads storyline with Hulk, where it sent him into an entirely new situation with an entirely new cast, but it kept that core of the Hulk at the same time. This is such a fun time.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's really fun. Peter Parker is like, guys, ease up on the killing. And Rocket is such a good foil for him in this. He's like, I can just kill, right? And he's like, no, and he's stopping. And then this this gold character that we see on the cover here is also really cool. I like what she's bringing to this as well.
Yeah, I agree. This is just fun. And the kind of back and forth with Rocket is great. The little pet symbiote is okay, but gold kind of
only okay.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how things. I'm not ready for Jeff status yet, but you know, let's take it easy. great art and action. This
nobody
is fun
said
and
that,
enjoyable.
By the way, nobody said that.
Nobody said that.
I said
Jeff.
It.
Let me say this though. I do like the little symbiote more than Jeff.
What?
Whoa!
That's just me. He's doing stuff.
Come on, dude. Jeff, like, saved the universe.
Yeah, but Jeff just is, like, trying to skateboard and stuff and messing it up. This symbiote's doing cool stuff.
No, dude. No, bro.
Helping out in a battle.
Yeah. All right, we'll see. We'll check in on symbiote. Yes.
Just one thing about this. What do we think? Because we're setting up Spider-Man, end of this issue. I have to get stronger. His whole time in space has been like, I have to get stronger.
Right.
We're setting him up for a battle with Hellgate, a character we met but know nothing about. Is that a little going to be a little weird when he's like, I'm finally strong enough to beat you, a stranger? The only thing we know is that, like, Hellgate's meant to learn from Spider-Man.
Right.
Is the idea of
that. Well, this gets back to something. I smell a training montage coming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
100% on that. I had said this a couple of issues back, but it has this weird, it had this weird trope that drives me crazy. They do it on TV a lot, where if the characters just, like, actually listen to what they were saying versus what the writer wants them to do, that you get past this conflict really quickly. And exactly what you're saying, Justin, it seems like Hellgate's like, no, I wanted you to teach me. And Spider-Man's going to be like, oh, whoops, and that's it. But...
Well, he was kicking his ass also, right. I think.
Exactly. But, like, they just...
It's like in a rom-com, if they just meet cute and then talk, then we don't need a movie.
Right.
That's just falling in love.
So I guess we'll see. Like, at this point, I'm excited to see how long they can string this along. These two different parallel storylines, because they're both very fun. So it eventually will come back together, and that's okay. But I'm having a great time so far. Good Devils from Image Comics by Nick Dragota and David Brothers. This is a series of short stories by this team. Ranging the gamut of a lot of subjects. What do you guys think?
Well, first off, very cool cover. I thought this was an awesome collection of stories, really fun pace, tons of action, dynamic art panels, real movement in the panel work. Really enjoyed this. Loved all the stories. This rocked.
I love the art here, and this feels like just the way it's part of the Nick Dragota's art that this feels like sort of a jam sesh type book where the first story is all black and white, just pencils in a really nice way. Then we get some color, and then we get a sort of a longer story at the end. And I like all of them. It made me want to see this as just an ongoing anthology of work. And maybe that's what we're going to get here.
Yeah, some of the stories are better than others, but like you said, Dragota's art is so great throughout. It's weirdly mostly a little more restrained, I think, than an absolute Batman, but I still really like it.
What is the other book he did? A Ghost something?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It was like a ghost breaking into a corporation.
Right?
East of West, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Art. But yes, there's a book that he did that I think, the Ghost one, I think he also wrote.
I think they did it together. I think that was David Brothers and Nick Dragota as well. And that was really good. That was somebody like fighting their way up a tower.
Yes, and it was like a little wilder just in sort of both the art, and then just what was happening. I was like, this is sort of insane across the board. Ghost Cage was the
there. You go.
Oh, yeah.
Good book.
And that was Ghost Nick Dragota and Caleb Goldner.
Oh, never mind. You know what? David Brothers and I believe Caleb Goldner are both old school comic book journalists. That's why I mixed them up. So there you go.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Anyway,
and the story was if Nicolas Cage was a ghost?
Yep.
Okay.
You would really like it, Pete.
Yeah. Were they both Comics Alliance people? Now I got to look into this.
Anyway. Well, that's you. That's a me thing.
You look it up. I'll talk about Batgirl.
Batgirl number 12 from DC Comics, written by Tate Bramble, art by Takeshi Miyazawa. In this issue, Batgirl and her half brother are gunning for some new enemies, or are they new allies? And who are the allies? And who are the enemies? We'll all find out together.
Pete, had to have a meeting. Literally, the last third of this book is a meeting.
Yes.
How dare and you?
May I say, cool cover.
Oh!
It is.
That's what I was going to say.
You going to elaborate on it, or can I elaborate on it?
Go ahead.
Okay, so you got Batgirl jumping straight towards the camera, the bat signal right above her through the snow. It's weird because
snow
doesn't match.
Snow is coming.
Anything in the book, but it's a really good Christmas cover.
It's good.
And I wish they had saved it for December. That's all I got to say.
Well, it's a foreshadowing of things to come. So,
Christmas.
Halloween's coming. It gets colder. Halloween. So.
Brr, Halloween. Yeah. Cocoa, sledding.
Uh-oh. Yeah. My pumpkin's full of fingernails.
But, yeah, I like this here. We got a, you know, we're trying to find out more about Batgirl, and we're learning about her family and all these kinds of things as she's going on the side quest here. And, yeah, it's you know, she makes a sad call with her friends who miss her, but, you know, she's trying to figure her life out. So, you know, I like all the drama. I like the adventure. I like what's happening. And, yeah, let's have Batgirl kick some more butt. I'm all in.
The series has done a good job of starting with some big Batgirl action, then jumping back and giving us some very distant Lady Shiva stuff that was her just observing, and now slowly bringing Batgirl and superheroics back into it. I like the other Al Ghul offspring here, which Nyssa. I think is cool as a Nyssa. That's fun and different life path than Talia, so that's cool. Yeah. And so let's see what happens next.
The Umbrella Academy, Plan B, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Gabriel Gerard Way, art by Gabriel Ba. In this issue, more Umbrella Academy stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening in this.
Yeah, that's my only problem. I love this book and I love the vibe. There's a thing where Klaus has a therapy session with a bunch of, I would call them dead ghosts, probably.
Yeah.
And their Space Boy is doing some stuff. There's things going on with the Sparrow Academy. They give an interview. But yes, I have, after really liking the first two issues, this has gone off the rails in issue 3.
See, well, I said this a little bit last issue. I'm like, I'm starting to lose the thread. And this issue was like, you don't know it. Who's talking right now? I was like, don't test me, book. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just so happy that this is back. And this is an amazing cover that we're kind of looking at here. That I'm okay with it getting jumping off the rails and getting crazy and getting weird. Because I'm just like, oh, I'm just so happy to be kind of back in this world. And I love this art and this kind of tone. And number 5 is just always so enjoyable. I don't feel like I don't get enough Klaus, but it's normal. The cool kind of check-in with the family at different times here. Another great issue, and I'm sure things will start to make more sense as we move on.
I mean, you're probably right, because I bet in next issue it's going to be like, all right, we have to get the Umbrella Academy back together, and then it will start to make more sense.
But yeah.
Then it's going to make me be like, who are all those people talking in issue 2 and 3?
Birds of Prey, number 26 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Sammy Basri and Vicente Quifentes. The birds are trying to find out more about the enemies who have preyed on them pretty much since the beginning of this run in various aspects. They're teaming up with some of their older enemies, and also they're getting in disguises and going to an old escape room. Fun times.
Yeah.
This book is so fun. It's so consistent. It's very upsetting that it's ending soon.
Oh,
yes.
Sadly canceled, seemingly in a not great way, it felt
no.
like. I mean, Kelly Thompson wasn't saying that she was sort of screwed over here. And
She said she put out a blog post where she was saying that, like, she talked to editorial. They were like, hey, we may need to wind this down. She said she felt like if she pushed, they would keep it going. But ultimately, if she could end it on her own terms when they're on a relative high note, that's what she's doing. So I think it ends with issue 28, I want to say, in December.
Oh, no.
Oof.
Yeah.
Well, sad to see it go, because I really like this book.
Yeah, this is great. This continues to be awesome. If we only get 2 more issues of greatness, we got 28 issues of greatness, so I'll take it. But, man, this is just such a blast. Barda as a gargoyle is just so fun. It's like the Gargoyles TV show in such a cool way. I'm just...
I don't know about that.
Well, you know, it makes me think of when you see Barda as a gargoyle, it makes me think of it. So
a bargoyle.
Yeah. Anyways, I love the art so much. I love the creative choices that they're making. It's fun to see them work as a team. I don't get tired of it. And this is just really impressive comics, and sad to see that it's winding down.
Rook Exodus, number 7 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Jason Fabuque. After a long break, I believe, this book is back. It takes place in a world where a bunch of people have animal masks that allow them to control animals, but also make them more animalistic in the process. And Rook, who controls birds, is trying... Yes. I was about to say rooks, but you know, you can figure that out. Anyway, he is trying to bring the planet back and get everybody to work together. Unfortunately, there's some animal mask people that just don't want to work with them.
It's a classic scenario. Cool cover.
Yeah, I mean, this reminds me of Magneto Birds, the upcoming book spinning into the Age of Revelation.
Oh, are they doing Magneto Birds? They're doing Magneto Bird, I know that. But is that spinning off into Magneto Birds?
Yeah, naturally. That's called a progression.
Magneto somebody's
gotta
make Birds.
We got to make a Birdman lawyer joke in here or something. I mean, come on.
Come on.
We got him. Let's get to that. Let's add that to the itinerary for our next meeting.
Okay, great. Yeah.
We'll circle back and get to that.
Oh, don't.
Let's get some sanity. It's honestly a pain point that we haven't gotten to it yet, but we'll circle back and get to it.
Oh, I hate you so much. All right, yeah. This
is your world, Pete. You should be using this language.
So I don't for a reason. Anyways, I love this art. I love all this action. This is very cool. I'm having a blast with this. It's funny though, because it's like I'm like, oh, this is so cool, controlling animals. Oh my god, spiders! Got really freaked out and scared. But you got deer guy fighting dog guy here, and this is some great kind of action. But man, spiders really creep me the fuck out.
I think I can control spiders.
Really, with your mind, or what are we talking here?
Yeah.
Do you have a flute, like a spider flute or something?
No, that would be a spider flute. That is the best way to control people. Spider Anytime flute. I get on my flute, it does make people leave.
Yeah.
In that
way.
That's what
I'm saying.
So, spider flute. Spider flute. Put some spiders in my boot. That's all I got so far. I'll keep working on that one as well.
It's funny you say that, Alex, because I'm actually going to try to send a spider to Pete's house, wherever it is.
I think it worked.
I'm sending spiders to you, Pete. So you let me know. You let me know if a spider, if you come across a spider.
You are welcome. Spiders are not welcome in my home.
I've never been invited, but I'm sending my spider.
I literally just invited you.
It doesn't count an invite when you don't tell us where your house is.
I know we don't usually talk about the other show you do, Justin, but isn't the other show you do called Spiders Not Welcome?
Yeah. Yes. It's a spinoff, and it takes place at Pete's house.
Anybody want to say anything about Rook or
Exodus or literally whatever?
Yeah.
I do have a question for you guys, because I thought the implication for the first issue of this was the planet was literally falling apart. But this issue, Rook is like, we're going to get everybody to work together and bring this planet back. So I feel like it was actually metaphorically falling apart. Did I get that wrong?
Yes, I think the planet, it was meant to be a place where everyone was going to go live on this nice planet, and they were going to have control over it, all the animals and stuff. And then they lost control, and so everyone's like, get us out of here, and they left behind all the workers.
Okay.
So they had to just be there controlling the animals, and then the bear guy was just going to kill them to take all their masks back for their corporate overlords or whatever. So I think that's like... It was falling apart in that way, the whole system. All and right. they're
I
trying to say...
I misunderstood for the first issue. Yes. I thought it was literally like the planet was about to crack apart.
There's a way to read it where you're following the plot, and there's a way to read it where you're like, masks make animals go. So yeah, I think you can enjoy it on either level.
Oh, okay.
But this is also... Justin brings up a good point. This is a good jumping on point, because they do a lot of recapping of stuff in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it reminds you, it's a recap of animals, where you're like, oh yeah, deer, spiders.
I remember.
And of course, birds.
Cheetah and Cheshire, speaking of animals, robbed the Justice League, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Greg Rucka, art by Nicola Scott. In this issue, the gang is all together, and now they're talking through their plan to rob the Watchtower. Yet another meeting, Pete, where everybody gets together, but... I know you guys are not as high. I feel like not as high on this book as I am, but I'm really enjoying it. I really like the character dynamics. There's some good betrayal and twists and turns that are going on in this issue. And I do think there is an underlying thing going on with Cheetah. They keep talking about how she is controlled by this god that gives her a nonstop hunger. And I think that's going to pay off down the road emotionally in very nice ways.
Wow. Yeah, I like this too. Like, I like the characters. I think the art's great. I like we have some potential romance happening here. I like the heist dynamic that we get in this issue and all the different takes from the different factions that have been gathered here.
I agree. I'm also enjoying this great art, fun last panel reveal, kind of a real ragtag team thing happening here if they're going to pull this off. This is an interesting idea, and I'm excited to see how this all goes down.
Something is Killing the Children, number 44, from Boom Studios, written by Jamestown IV, art by Werther Delladera. In this issue, we're continuing the arc of a young Erica on a snowy mountainside, but it's no vacation. There's monsters.
We got a lot of snow and comics in this week's thing, and I am here for it.
Tis the season.
It's a cool cover. I love this art. There's some really beautiful scenic panels here with snowfall that are just quite lovely. I think that this is such an interesting issue. We're kind of getting some information here, which I'm always excited about, and we're kind of learning about kind of how things are working behind the scenes, which is great. We kind of get a real join us next time at the end, but I cannot wait, and I've been loving this. So Justin might call this a middling issue, but I still very much loved every bit of it and excited.
Every issue of this comic is a middling issue.
How dare you?
Because, you know, it's very funny to me that you hated Absolute Evil because it was a meeting. Mm-hmm. There's a third of the book is someone being like, can I get this reference material? And they're like, no. Well,
it's still not a meeting.
It felt like the action is, no, you can't. Well, I guess you can.
But what about the snowy mountaintop that they
cool.
cut to?
We're going to get something eventually. I mean, and I do like this. It's interesting. It's just truly, this is the most spare comic on the stands. And we just
You got to work for it, bro.
Yeah, I guess. That's what I say about everything I enjoy.
Poison Ivy, number 37 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Adigun Ilhan. After the events of the past couple of issues, Poison Ivy is kind of delving back into villainy. This issue, she finds out what's up with Janet from HR, and it is not good. What'd you guys think about this one?
Yeah, this is heartbreaking, man. I mean, this whole Janet from HR thing has been a real roller coaster of emotions. First off, cool cover. The fact that Janet might be a rat is just fucking heartbreaking. You know what I mean? And, hopefully, the green's going to help, but I don't know, man. I just don't know how I feel anymore, you know?
You think she's going down?
Janet really broke my heart, and I don't know. I don't know if I'll be okay.
Think about how far this book has come from the first arc way back in the day where she was going around just killing the world, essentially, with her spores. And now I feel like this issue is very reflexive on how much Poison Ivy has changed. And she talks about, like, I never cared for people. Oh, God, I've messed this up. She's feeling guilty. Then we get the reveal at the end that Janet finally tells her that she has betrayed her. And the look on her face just got me. Yeah. She's like, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
And, like, it's rare to have a character like Poison Ivy go on such a long emotional journey. And we're really paying dividends on what we learned at the beginning.
But what sucks is Janet had all these kind of like, you know, love triangles and all these kind of things where we were rooting for her. And this kind of like, she's been a rat this whole time is just so fucking heartbreaking. You know, it's like if Alex was like, hey, I work for the FBI, you know, it's like, Jesus, this was a long con. And I feel so dumb.
Alex volunteers at the FBI.
I do. As bait. Well, and that's it.
That's what the B in FBI stands for.
Yeah.
bait.
I rule.
Great. Anyway, if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books, Apple, Spotify, sure Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Good stuff, guys. I don't really have the bandwidth to keep going, so let's circle back, run it up the flagpole, and really take this to HR, because there's a pain point happening right now.
You're my pain point.
And they let the secrets leak. And occasionally